Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to City of Champions Radio. It's been a couple of weeks, but thanks for tuning in this Sunday evening, or if you're listening via the archived version here on Blog Talk Radio, we thank you for visiting City of Champions at cityofchampionsports.com. We've got your comprehensive Pittsburgh sports coverage from the big three of the Penguins, Pirates, and Steelers on to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds soccer team now in action. Of course, University of Pittsburgh, Robert Morris University, Point Park, Duquesne. It's all there at cityofchampionsports.com, part of the Fan-Sided Network. I'm your co-host for the evening as we rev up a Pittsburgh Penguins pregame podcast on City of Champions Radio. I'm Matt Geica, and joined by my fellow co-host, whenever we talk hockey, of course, it's got to be Larry Snyder on the other end of the line. Larry, the Penguins and the Sharks this evening, wrapping up another busy weekend for Pittsburgh. Two games in 2 days, both at Consol Energy Center. So I guess if you're going to play back-to-back, you'd rather them both be in the friendly confines.
Well, as always, yes, nice to wake up in your own bed and have breakfast, with your family. So that would be good indeed. If you're going to play back-to-backs, let's have them at home. One quick note before we get along too much farther, our condolences from both the City of Champions sports website as well as the Gospel of Hockey podcast to head coach Mike Johnson on the recent loss of his mother. He's going to be heading up to Nova Scotia this week for the funeral. And we just pass along our sympathies and condolences to Coach Johnston. But, Penguins, it's their 15th set of back-to-back games. And thus far, they've accumulated a record of 14-9-6, going 9-3-3 on the first night and 5-6-3 in the second game. So this second game against the Sharks may be a little more critical to at least get that record back to 500.
Yes, and the Sharks, although it's looking like they're going to miss the playoffs for the first time in nearly a decade, still a challenging opponent. And when you look at the roster and you still see guys like the old standbys and Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, and I guess now Joe Pavelski at age 30 is kind of an old standby too, although it still seems like he's a pretty young player, but he's established quite a pedigree in the league. Logan Couture, some talented youngsters like Tomáš Hertl of the Czech Republic, having a bit of a disappointing season. Matt Nieto, former national team development program player. There is some talent on this Sharks club. Marc-Edouard Vlasic, of course, a great defender on the blue line and was a gold medal winner last year at the Sochi Olympics. And Antti Niemi, although I think perhaps popular opinion of his play in net for the Sharks in the past couple of seasons has gone downhill, it is still a Stanley Cup winning goalie from 2010, of course, with the Chicago Blackhawks that you're presumably going to go up against. And if you remember, of course, Larry, just a couple of weeks ago out in San Jose, the Penguins and the Sharks played a tight game that was 1-1 through regulation, and the Sharks won in a shootout. Since then, San Jose hasn't been able to really capitalize on that game to put together a winning streak. But at the same time, especially coming off the back-to-back situation, even though it is at home, I do anticipate a close one this evening at Consol Energy Center.
Oh, I do too, just because I think the players, certainly everybody's going to be tired because some of our fans may not know is the San Jose Sharks played yesterday afternoon in Philadelphia against the Flyers at the Wells Fargo Center. They came out of that game with a 3-2 victory, I believe, in a shootout or at least overtime. So the Sharks and the Penguins, there's no sympathies for either one because they both played yesterday, so they're both going to be in back-to-backs here for this event, although the Penguins are going to be down a man defensively. I think they're only going to be having five healthy defensemen to work the blue line tonight because Chris Letang collided with Shane Doan there in yesterday afternoon's game, and he has been diagnosed with a concussion. And so the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to have to rotate five D-men this evening.
It was odd yesterday just because it was supposed to finally be the game that the Penguins were healthy outside of Christian Ehrhoff, who has really been in and out of the lineup due to what was originally a concussion. I'm not sure if that's still the case. I happened to be at the game against the Blues where he was re-injured, an awkward fall into the boards. So Ehrhoff was expected to be out for yesterday's game, but The Penguins getting back both Evgeny Malkin and Patrick Hornqvist, and that top six was looking to be intact perhaps for the first time in a long time. But then David Perron got sick apparently before the game, some kind of an illness that may hold him out of tonight's game as well. And then you had the Chris Letang injury, which was very scary. And talk about awkward falls into the boards like Erhoff had last week. Chris Letang making a long lead pass up the ice, and Shane Doan trying to finish his check, as he explained after the game. It might have been a touch late. I'm not sure I have an issue with the timing of the hit. It's just that Letang was a dangerous distance from the boards, maybe a couple of feet, and when he stumbled back, he went essentially neck and head first into the end wall. So a scary situation as he tried to get back up onto his feet. He had to be escorted off the ice into the Penguins dressing room. He was later examined at a nearby hospital, diagnosed with a concussion today, as expected. It looked like he was quite out of it as he came to his feet. So the Pens missing Letang, missing probably Perron again tonight, and with that salary cap situation, the Penguins right up against it, and there being no long-term injured reserve list at this point in the season, those circumstances are conspiring to cause a shorthanded situation here. And I read, Larry, that Daniel Winnick, the recently acquired forward from Toronto, who's played quite well in the last couple of games up with Sidney Crosby on the top line for the Pens, he apparently has some kind of experience defensively, and he could play on the blue line tonight if the Penguins need it. So just add another bit of intrigue to tonight's game with that news.
Well, it certainly would be. You know, the Penguins are no strangers of moving players around like that, certainly under Dan Bylsma. So, you know, having a forward play a little D, you know, is nothing new for the Pittsburgh Penguins in the last 10 years, so maybe we'll get back to that. I wanted to ask you here, I'm taking a look at the standings right now, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are tied with the New York Islanders as we go into tonight's game against San Jose, 93 points apiece in the Metropolitan Division. New York Rangers have already clinched a playoff spot, 47-21-7, 101 points. They join Anaheim, Nashville, and Montreal as the teams with 100 points or more so far in the league. At the beginning of the season, if I had told you the New York Rangers would be a team in that type of position, one of four teams with over 100 points towards the end of the season, and first place in Metro Metropolitan Division, would you want to place that bet in Vegas, or would you shy away from it there, Matthew?
I might shy away from it a bit, but, you know, just looking at how things have shaken out recently in the Metro, the Rangers were so good for a couple of weeks there. They really pulled away, and it's looking like they're definitely going to take that with seven games to play for both the Pens and the Rangers. And an 8-point separation, Pens at 93, Rangers at 101, as you said. It certainly appears that the Rangers are going to have their top seeding going into the first round. And, of course, it's now divisional playoffs for the second straight year. The NHL will go with that format for its postseason. So the Rangers likely going to take on one of the wild card teams, which still could be the Penguins. And if you look at those standings, like you were starting to go over there, the Islanders with 93 points. Islanders are in action, by the way, tonight. Last I saw, they were tied 2-2 with the Detroit Red Wings. And then the Capitals just a point back at 92. Any of those three teams, the Pens, the Isles, and the Capitals, could finish in the second spot, the third spot, or the fourth spot in the Metro. So that's gives me a sense of deja vu because I swear, Larry, the last time we talked, I was saying the identical thing, that the Pens, the Isles, and the Caps are right there in the mix for that number two spot, and it could really go any which way. And we're still saying that with just 2 weeks to go in the NHL regular season. So I have no reason to believe that once we get to the end of the 82-game marathon that we're going to have that big of a separation between those three teams.
Well, the part that concerns me the most is the Rangers are 19-5-1 against their brothers in the Metropolitan Division. The New York Islanders are 25-1 against their Metro brothers, and the Washington Capitals are 15-8-4. And but you come back to the Penguins, and they're 9-13-4 in the Metro Division. And the only teams with similar marks are Philadelphia in a distant fifth place. They're 9-12-4 in the Metro. Columbus is 11-11-3. They're at least at, you know, 500, so to speak. New Jersey 10-11-6 in the Metro, and Carolina 11-11-5. It just is mystifying that the Penguins can't seem to get a handle on the teams they need to be able to beat the most, that they see the most. And again, this is an interesting trend this season that I'm not too sure too many people saw coming.
I know I didn't, because last year I believe it was close to the opposite. The Pens were very good in the Metropolitan Division. Of course, it didn't really help them in the playoffs. They had a rough go with Columbus in the first round, and then the Rangers coming back from 3-1 down in the second round to beat them. But it really is remarkable. You said the number in the Metro. I'll say it again: 9-13-4, rather, for the Penguins. And against the Atlantic, it is 15-4-3. So I know I'm not alone amongst Pens fans in saying I've been maybe a little bit rooting for the Penguins to drop further down those Metro standings and grab one of those wild cards, and then perhaps cross over and play either Montreal or Tampa Bay, which is a possibility depending on how the standings shake out. Of course, there's also the possibility that if you finish fourth in the Metro and get one of the wild card spots, you'll play New York, the Rangers, that is. And I don't like the Penguins matchup against the Rangers this year. I just don't feel like it's a good one. And I would much rather see either Montreal, even with Carey Price playing out of his mind in net, or Tampa Bay, which is a good young team on the rise. Just based on the season matchups, it feels like the Pens have more or less had their way against the Atlantic Division. Yes, some of those games have come against the Buffalo Sabres, the worst team in the league, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Florida Panthers, although they've been frisky lately. So some of those bottom feeder teams, if you will, in the Atlantic. But in a lot of ways, those numbers don't lie. And, you know, what are your feelings on that situation? Because it does feel strange to be saying, well, I wouldn't mind to see them fall down the standings. Because in the end, like I said, you're still rolling the dice and you still might end up with the Rangers in the first round.
Well, exactly. And I'm not too sure I want to start with the Rangers in the first round. Let the Rangers play, you know, a series or maybe even two and get, you know, get those playoff hits and knockarounds a little bit and maybe soften them up a little bit. So when the Pens do have to play them, you know, it might fall more the Penguins' way. So, yeah, you got to be careful what you wish for because, it may just come back to bite you, as some would like to say, on the backside. Take a look against the West, Pittsburgh against the Western Conference, 17-6-4. They're 7-4-3 against the Central and 10-2-1 against the Pacific. So, they don't mind playing, you know, the Western teams, whether at home or out West, it seems like. It's just that Metro Division seems to have them stymied so this season.
That's a really odd circumstance, the way it has played out this season. And the Penguins have traditionally struggled out West. I think they're not alone amongst the Eastern teams, especially that first game out there. It's tough to get your legs under you with the jet lag and the travel and all of that. But this season it hasn't seemed to bother them. Maybe a one-year anomaly. We'll find out, I guess, next season if that carries over. But maybe I should be rooting for the NHL to just straight-up seed it 1 through 16, eliminate all the conferences. Then the Penguins might have an even better shot matchup-wise. But, of course, that's a pipe dream at this point. I've actually heard the NBA might be considering doing that, just letting the best 16 out of 30 get into the playoffs and go from there. And the NHL used to do that for a brief time in the early to mid-80s before they went over to the divisional format, then the conference, and now we're back to the division. So the formats, like they do in most leagues for the playoffs, have bounced around a bit. But I was fearing a matchup with the Islanders, too. However, the Isles 2-6-2 in their past 10 games. The Penguins haven't set the world on fire results-wise over a similar stretch. They're 3-5-2, and they had lost 6-7 in one form or fashion or another going into yesterday's come-from-behind win against Arizona. I can't get that out of my head. The Arizona Coyotes, not the Phoenix Coyotes anymore. That's a tough one. But the Islanders, I think it was in our last show, Larry, I said they have been remarkably consistent this season, or at least they had been, but they've finally hit a bump in the road here. I wonder how Isles fans are feeling, because I know here in Pittsburgh with the Penguins not being able to string wins together since, well, really the end of November, it's been a constant stream of negativity. I wonder if it's the same thing on Long Island.
New Yorkers being negative? Oh, fuck, that never happens. My goodness, sir. I don't know what you're drinking, but we're going to have take a look at this because New Yorkers being negative. Next thing you're going to tell me that Philadelphians boo Santa Claus. I just don't know how to take that. But yes, I'm sure Islander fans. I know when I look at social media at all the people I know who do root for the Pittsburgh Penguins, it does seem like when things aren't going well, it seems like they want to head to one of the bridges in Pittsburgh and it's time to jump. And it's like, slow down here, Seabiscuit. We got still some time left in the regular season before we start the playoffs. My larger concern is, and there is some concern about the play on the ice. There seemed to be a stretch here recently where I think some would make a case that they were playing a little more undisciplined and needed to get their act a little bit more together. But my biggest concern is who's going to be the last man out of the locker room to turn off the lights when it's time to go take the ice, because it just seems like we get one or two players back on the ice healthy again. And last night it was Malkin and Hornquist who finally made it back, and then you lose Letang. And earlier in the season, you know, Malkin was playing well, but Crosby goes down and misses a few games. And so my biggest concern is this season, the Penguins seem to be, you know, the consistency of peanut brittle at times. We can't have everybody healthy at the same time on the ice, because then I think we truly see how good of a team we do have. But if not all the pieces are there, then that makes it that much more rougher for the team and for the fans. And I'm kind of curious whether, you know, because he has had so many injuries this year, has it been a fair judgment on Mike Johnson's coaching style? I can't see the Penguins going one and done with him, but he has had a rough go up here of late.
He has, and I do think public perception is more negative than the perception inside the Penguins dressing room and inside Penguins headquarters down on Fifth Avenue. So I do hesitate to say that Mike Johnson is completely safe no matter what happens this year. And like you said earlier, I do echo the condolences for Mike going through a rough stretch on the ice in Pittsburgh and now, of course, emotionally and family-wise as he heads back to Nova Scotia after this evening's game. But, you know, I'm really hoping that yesterday's game was kind of a breakthrough for the Pens because, really, if you look at the numbers, look at the underlying numbers, I'm not talking about goals for and goals against because the Penguins have had a difficult time finishing for whatever reason lately. I think yesterday was a terrific microcosm of their recent play because they got all manner of shots from multiple angles against Coyotes goalie Mike Smith, just could not put the puck in the corner, could not make that perfect shot or at least that near-perfect shot that you sometimes need to beat an NHL goalie, and it's got to happen at times. You got to have guys who can bury the puck, and the Penguins are getting the right guys getting those looks, and it just wasn't falling, and they were scoreless through two periods. They fell behind 1-0, and they've struggled to come from behind late in games, but then they get that three-goal outburst, and it just seemed to be such a relief. Not just for the Penguins, but for everyone at Consol Energy Center, for the Pens to finally start putting the puck in the net because it has been a struggle. And I've continuously, over the past couple of weeks, harped on how well defensively the Penguins have been playing. I think they've possessed the puck really well, and that contributes to their defensive success. And I just think they should be scoring more. And if you look at the shots on goal or just the plain shot attempts out there, the Penguins are among the best teams in the NHL over the last 25 games in terms of creating shot attempts and preventing their opponents from shooting the puck. So you feel like, or at least I feel like, if that continues, I really like their chances to get on a hot streak in the playoffs, provided they can start to put the puck in the net with a little more regularity. A lot of times it's just a streak of bad fortune, and I'm hoping that yesterday was maybe a breakthrough in the positive direction in that area. But getting back to your point about Mike Johnson, too, remember early in the season when you would have the excuse of the team being new to the system and the coaching staff still trying to figure out what it has in the roster, some new players brought in over the summer. The Penguins were predominantly healthy over that stretch, and they were playing very well through October and November. They were right at the top of the NHL standings. I still think that this Penguins team is closer to that team than what we've seen lately. Of course, how that plays out remains to be seen. But I'm still optimistic that when this team is anywhere close to full strength, that it has a very high ceiling.
Oh, I would agree with you. I think we got a quick snapshot before players started dropping out and missing games and injury-wise, and it definitely, the beginning of the season, I think had a lot of people hopeful, and I still think, yes, I agree with you. If you get all those players back together, you can keep them on the ice at the same time, play on the same lines on a consistent basis, then this is a pretty good team. Marc-Andre Fleury certainly has had a good season, and shudder to think what would have happened at any point during their season if Fleury had been injured and where the Penguins might be then, because he certainly, you know, would get my vote for MVP this season, the way he's been performing in the net. Side note about tonight's game, if Sidney Crosby can get on the board from a goal standpoint, he will have 300 goals in his career. So let's see if Sidney Crosby can make it two nights in a row with getting a puck in the net. It should be exciting down at Consol Energy Center.
One last thing on the Pens before we move on to some RMU hockey to close out the show. I want to talk about that power play. The Penguins getting a couple of PPGs in the third period last night, and that was refreshing to see. That's been, maybe that's the reason that the Penguins have not been producing the goals. It's not finishing overall, but just finishing on the power play. And a lot of times it's a downer when the Penguins get a penalty call against the opposition, because all that momentum and all that good feeling that they generate at 5-on-5 goes away quickly. It dissipates because their power play has not been able to produce the types of shots and scoring chances you would expect. But with Malkin back in the lineup, and I hate to say it at the risk of sounding insensitive, and I tweeted something to this effect yesterday, but I just don't think Chris Letang is a good power play quarterback, a good distributor of the puck. And I like seeing Derek Pouliot. I think he's a very natural power play performer, and that's been the case in his career throughout juniors with the Portland Winterhawks and with Mike Johnston coaching him there. And then just recently with the American Hockey League's Wilkes-Barre Scranton Club, he is a natural with the man advantage. And I also have always liked Paul Martin at the point, too. So I think if you have Pouliot and Martin on the points and then Crosby, Malkin, and Hornqvist down low as the forwards, I believe that is my best power play unit if I'm Mike Johnston looking forward. And nothing against Chris Letang. I think he drives play for the Pens expertly. And you can hardly find a better skater, a better puck handler, especially on the defensive side of things in the NHL. But I don't like him on the power play. And I hope that even if Letang comes back healthy, that the Pens can find a way to keep Pouliot and Martin on the points. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I like the idea of letting Pouliot, you know, be the quarterback, as you said, you know, working on the power play. You know, I'm glad he you know, was able to get back from Wilkes-Barre Scranton. I'm just kind of curious, what can they do for a sixth defenseman if Letang is going to be out for a certain amount of time? But, yes, I do like, you know, Pouliot in that role. And we'll have to wait and see what happens here in the next few days. But, yes, power play goal was working. You know, I believe it went 2-for-6. And so that certainly helps, or at least if it was 2-for-6. If it wasn't 2-for-6, was it definitely against the Coyotes, they were 2-for-6. Let me back that up. And so, yes, if they can get that going again, it works. And special teams, you know, certainly was helping to drive in those early success in October and November. And hopefully they can get that going again tonight and keep it going against San Jose.
Yes, remember how good that power play was the first couple of months of the season. And even when Letang was on it, it was able to create and generate the type of opportunities one would expect. So that's huge for this team. And I'm not really exactly splitting the atom by saying that. It's nothing genius level analysis or anything along those lines. With the power play, at least just clicking at league average rates, which it has struggled to reach over the past 3-4 months or so, this team will be very dangerous, I believe, if they can keep up their 5-on-5 play, which that Carolina game excepted, I think, has been really quite terrific for a long stretch of time. Like I said, the goals for haven't been there, but I'm hopeful that that turns around and they start to get some good fortune at the finishing end. So, yes, we look forward to the matchup against the Sharks tonight. And, of course, just a handful of games left before the most wonderful time of the year, the NHL playoffs start in the middle of April, and we're almost there. So if we can just hang in there, I think, a little bit as well. If once the playoffs get started, we'll really see what this team is all about. Let's talk some college hockey here on this Penguins pregame edition of the Gospel of Hockey. Larry, you and I both closely tied with the RMU team, and a heartbreaking end of the season. I've used that adjective several times, and it continues to apply really even today, actually especially this weekend as we watch the NCAA tournament play on without the Colonials involved. It looked to be perhaps the best Colonials team in 11 years, even better than last year's squad that really came on late and won the Atlantic Hockey Tournament. The Colonials, even though they prevailed and took the regular season championship in Atlantic Hockey, they always knew from the midpoint of the season on that their computer rankings, their strength of schedule, wasn't going to be good enough. It was a real down league for Atlantic Hockey, and so they knew they had to get that automatic spot that goes to the tournament winner. And the Colonials, despite firing 62 shots on goal, a program record, against Mercyhurst last Friday up in Rochester at Blue Cross Arena. Mercyhurst tying the game in the final seconds with an extra attacker and then winning it on a long-distance shot that seemed to surprise sophomore goalie Dalton Isaac. And that delivered the Lakers a 4-3 overtime win. Mercyhurst went on to lose to RIT in the championship game, and RIT just upset number one-seeded Minnesota State Mankato in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So, Larry, I can't help but think, man, that should have been RMU getting a chance to get that huge upset. Kudos to RIT for winning it. I thought they were the second-best team in Atlantic Hockey at the end of the year and certainly the hottest. But, man, it's tough to think otherwise that the Colonials should have still gotten an opportunity to play on this season.
Well, I agree with you, and we talked about this off-air a little while ago, and I definitely would like to see maybe an adoption of the rule where you have some play-in games, either two or four, go full bore, before this tournament starts, so that, like this year, there were at least three teams that felt they should have gotten an at-large bid, the RMU Colonials, the Bowling Green Falcons, as well as UMass Lowell. So, when teams like Yale and Quinnipiac are there, as well as Miami of Ohio and Harvard, let's have a play-in game, make sure we've got the best there. And if they are indeed the best, then they will beat RMU or Bowling Green or UMass Lowell and prove that they deserve to be in the tournament to begin with. And yes, maybe we could have some other interesting upset stories. Rochester International is going to face Omaha, Nebraska Omaha, that is, the Mavericks, coming up tomorrow night at 7:30 on ESPN. Excuse me, I think that's tonight.
Tonight, yes, all the regionals wrap up.
7:30 tonight, right. They're playing at 7:30 tonight. Providence and Denver are playing right now. And in the third period, it's Providence 1, Denver nothing. So should be interesting to see what happens if Providence can make that score hold up and hang on to, win that game. We already have Boston U and North Dakota on the other side of the bracket ready to participate at the Frozen Four coming up on April the 9th, and that game will be seen on ESPN2.
Boston University with Uber prospect freshman Jack Eichel leading the way. That should be fun to see them in the Frozen Four. And North Dakota has been up there all season long, so definitely two deserving entrants in what will be an exciting national semifinal round, which will start in Boston in a couple of weekends. Listeners may remember that I wrote a column talking about maybe some possible solutions, like the one that Larry talked about, a play-in round for the NCAA hockey tournament. And I got some pushback on this, saying that they don't want, or the college hockey fans, some of them, don't want college hockey to become like college football, where it seems like half of all the teams, actually I think more than half of the Division I football teams, get a bowl bid. But this is quite different, I think. I think that's not an apples-to-apples comparison. I also don't think it compares extremely well to the basketball tournament. 68 teams now go to March Madness, and that's a little over 20% of the Division I teams, and it turns out there are a lot more Division I basketball teams than I thought, over 300. But college hockey only has 59. They'll have 60 next year when Arizona State joins up, And if you do let in, say, you go from 16 to 20, that would push that percentage over 30. But I don't see the harm in it, really. I know that some would say it dilutes the field. I don't think it does, because you would still give your top, eight teams at least, I believe. Maybe, no, the top 12 teams would get a bye, so to speak, into the regional semifinals, while the other eight teams, say if you do go to 20, so seeds 13 through 20 would play in that play-in round that you talked about, Larry, and you could just have that at a regional site and put that into the fold, much like college basketball does. There's so much parity in college hockey, and I just think it's a shame to leave out deserving teams, in my opinion, like Robert Morris, like Bowling Green. Hard to believe that the Falcons aren't in the tournament after what we saw from them at the midpoint of the season playing a two-game series, home-and-home against the Colonials. Same with Colgate, who was probably the most impressive performance I saw from an RMU opponent all season in the Three Rivers Classic Championship game over the holiday break. Yes, I realize I do have bias from seeing those teams live compared to squads like Quinnipiac or Yale or Harvard, like Larry was rattling off there. But at the same time, what's the harm in giving some other teams who have it in them to make a run, certainly a chance at a national championship? You just get more fan bases involved. And I think it spreads the wealth and it spreads the excitement on what is a great game in college hockey, which can get overshadowed this time of the year with the basketball going on and with NHL and NBA winding down and spring training kicking up. I don't see any harm. I don't see much harm, I should say, more good than bad, in expanding the field maybe by just a handful of teams. So I'll get off my soapbox now, and I want to talk about the Robert Morris University all-time leading scorer, Cody Wideau, was quickly snapped up, as we anticipated, after the Colonial season ended last Friday. Mr. Wideau, the native of Southgate, Michigan, and a Hobey Baker Award finalist, the first in program history, signed with the nearby Wheeling Nailers. And from what I understand, it was quite the scene at West Banco Arena as Wideau made his pro debut and recorded a goal and an assist in the third period of a Wheeling Nailers 2-1 win over the Fort Wayne Comets. More than 50 RMU players and fans made the trip down and really added a level of excitement to what would normally be a pretty typical late-season ECHL game. So really cool, really heartwarming, I think, to see all that support headed down to Wheeling. And good for us, Larry, selfishly, we can head down there and still see Wideau play when, in a lot of cases, guys travel far from their colleges to continue their careers.
Oh, I agree, and I think the Nailers, know, and they've already seen that there were people snatching up tickets who are RMU students or RMU alumni are heading over to West Banco Arena. So, you know, I think it behooved them on their part to, pull this, make this type of signing, and it certainly paid dividends for them right away, so who knows? Maybe Wideau can, move up in the system, and maybe we will be talking about him next season, possibly getting a few games in with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins in the American Hockey League, and that certainly would be something for the RMU Colonials program to see a player progressing that far in what we like to refer to as the minor leagues in hockey.
Well, and as it turns out, the Colonials have only had a couple of players reach the AHL level. They've had Denny Urban, the program's all-time leading scorer among defensemen, also a Pittsburgh native, Denny Urban, too, by the way. He's been with the Springfield Falcons in the last couple of seasons. Andrew Blazik, who played for last year's Colonials team that went to the NCAA tournament, he also made his AHL debut this year for the Worcester Sharks, and he's been with the Cincinnati Cyclones as well, the ECHL. And we've had Nathan Longpre with the Chicago Wolves over the last couple of years. Longpre, previous to Wideau breaking the record, was the Colonials' all-time top point producer. So there have been a couple, but Wideau does seem to have that special ability. There's always room for guys who score goals, and he showed that right away in his pro debut. And from what I understand, it was the Penguins organization who pushed the Nailers to go ahead and sign Wideau to what we believe is a pro tryout contract, not entirely sure of the exact nature of it. So, to be clear, it wasn't the Penguins organization signing the deal, but I think they wanted the option of perhaps having Wideau available, and not just for the ECHL club, but perhaps for the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. And, of course, also the Montreal Canadiens have an affiliation stake in the Nailers too. So, well, it always broadens your options, I think, as a player. But cool to hear about the local interests. And Penguins brass certainly had plenty of opportunities to see Cody Waddo play over the past 4 years. So I suppose no surprise there that they put in a vote of confidence with Clark Donatelli, the Nailers head coach, who also, I would presume, functions as their primary player acquisition manager, to take a chance on Waddo. And it was weird, Larry, I will admit, seeing him in black and gold instead of red, white, and blue, and also sporting the visor, but weird in a good way, I would say.
Yes, as always, good in a good way, and it certainly, yes, was different to see him in a different color uniform, but a uniform that it can certainly be appreciated by fans throughout Western Pennsylvania, whether you're a Robert Morris fan or a Pittsburgh Penguin fan or a Wheeling Nailer fan. You can appreciate when someone who has performed well at one level around the region can make it and move on to the next level. And it will be like we said, you know, there's been two or three players in Robert Morris' history that have made it to the American hockey level, which is considered AAA hockey, you know, across North America. And let's see if Waddo can be the next one to break that far. And who knows where the ceiling's going to be on his potential here yet.
Yes, I know that, or at least I feel that I think he has the ability to perhaps threaten that NHL barrier that has proven to be a tough one to break through for RMU program alumni, but we shall see in the future. Nonetheless, at the very least, actually, it's a very fun connection for us, as we often talk about the RMU Colonials, and we have discussed the Wheeling Nailers on many an occasion, so a fun connection for us to make here on the Gospel of Hockey Show. And that's the way we'll wrap up this evening's program. Quick note from Twitter, I'm just seeing that David Perron will be in the lineup for the Pens tonight, so that will be good. As the Pens try to get somewhere close to full capacity, they will be without Chris Letang, though, for the foreseeable future, including tonight's game against the San Jose Sharks. Thanks for listening to the Gospel of Hockey special Penguins pregame edition. We may try something like this in the future as well, so we hope you liked it. For Larry Snyder, this has been Matt Geica, reminding you that when the radio fades, you know life's moving fast. This has been City of Champions Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for visiting cityofchampionsports.com.